Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As professional activities or business profits cannot help one in spiritual advancement, but are a source of material entanglement, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot help anyone who is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. As professional activities or business profits cannot help one in spiritual advancement, but are a source of material entanglement, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot help anyone who is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one becomes very rich through his professional activities, through trade or through agriculture, this does not mean that he is spiritually advanced. To be spiritually advanced is different from being materially rich. Although the purpose of life is to become spiritually rich, unfortunate men, misguided as they are always engaged in trying to become materially rich. Such material engagements, however, do not help one in the actual fulfillment of the human mission. On the contrary, material engagements lead one to be attracted to many unnecessary necessities, which are accompanied by the risk that one may be born in a degraded condition. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 18, Urdvang gacchanti sattvasta madhye tishtanti rajasaha jaganya guna vrittista adho gacchanti tamasaha. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets, and those in the mode of ignorance go down to the hellish planets. Especially in this Kali Yuga, material advancement means degradation and attraction to many unwanted necessities that create a low mentality. Therefore, jaganya guna vrittista, since people are contaminated by the lower dual qualities, they will lead their next lives either as animals or in other degraded forms of life. Making a show of religion without Krishna consciousness may make one popular in the estimation of unintelligent men, but factually such a materialistic display of spiritual advancement does not help one at all. It will not prevent one from missing the goal of life. Om jnana tamarandasya jnananjana salakaya chaksurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobistam stapatam yena bhutale svayam rupakadamayam dadati svapadantikam nama om vishnu padaya krishna pristaya bhutale srimate bhaktivedanta swaminiti namine namaste saraswati deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschachari satadine Vanchakalpatarabhyascha kripa sindhubhebhacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. As professional activities or business profits cannot help one in spiritual advancement but are a source of material entanglement, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot help one who is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a continuing conversation between Narad Muni and Maharaj Yudhisthira. And actually later on, Narad Muni explains that he also was captivated some or another. He was a Gandharva in the heavenly planets. And after that life, he came down. He fell down to this planet and became the son of a Sudrani. But he was most fortunate because his mother, who didn't have a husband, who was an assistant to very advanced sages, Vedic sages, who practiced devotional service. And of course, her business was simply to look after them, to clean their cottages, to wash their clothes, to clean their dishes, and the reward for that was her and her son got to eat prasadam. Now in this chapter, Narad Muni emphasizes the distribution of prasadam. That's why it is so important that prasadam distribution goes on, because it's actually instructed by Narad Muni, that this is a very important, very significant, transcendental, loving service. Just like here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, it's very famous for unlimited prasadam. Any guest who comes for breakfast, even uninvited, or just coming as a friend of one of the devotees that they may have sold a book to or something, there's always nice breakfast prasadam, there's always nice lunch prasadam. And of course in our big centers like Sri Mayapur Dham, they have unlimited prasadam distribution going on to tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of people. And I was just reflecting when we were saying that prayer to Srila Prabhupada this morning, our spiritual master. He is a friend of the poor, but actually he's also the friend of the rich. I have personal experience in that, because where did Srila Prabhupada stay when he first came to England in 1969, in September? Anybody know? John Lennon's house. Yeah, so he exactly wasn't poor. He was actually, at that time in history, in the 60s, 69, he was one of the most famous musicians on the planet. In fact, he went so far as to say that the Beatles were more famous than Jesus Christ. And they got reprimanded for saying that. But through the media, of course, through their music, they were able to summon other captivate the hearts of hundreds of millions of people. But Prabhupada wanted to captivate his heart, along with George Harrison's, in adding Krishna to all their success. He also, Prabhupada made a comment too. He said that the Beatles, because one devotee said, how is it that these northerners from Liverpool, from, you know, pretty much working class families, didn't have any background whatsoever being wealthy, how did they all of a sudden leap in their lives? It was like a quantum leap from being practically poverty-stricken to being the most famous, most wealthiest musicians. And Prabhupada said, well, they were fallen demigods. And here, of course, it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, text 18, that those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets, those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets, and those in the mode of ignorance go down to the hellish planets. So you've got a choice here. You can either progress in this human form of life, or you can really just progress on a material platform by going searching after riches. There's nothing wrong in searching after riches if you're going to use those riches in Krishna's service. When I got my name, Dhananjaya Das, Prabhupada, at the actual fire ceremony that took place also in John Lennon's estate, in our temple, he said, so Dhananjaya means winner of wealth. He said, and he went like this with his arms. He said, money is flying in all directions. All directions. We just simply have to learn the art of catching it and using it for Krishna. And so I kind of like meditated on it and thought, well, this has got to be my service now. I've got to some or another go out there and learn the art of catching money and bringing it to Prabhupada. And I read in the Bhagavatam, because when I joined in July 69, there weren't too many books around like we have today. We've got libraries full of transcendental literature, literally speaking, because especially in India, it's just amazing how many thousands of new books are coming out constantly from devotees, from their realizations, and that's, Prabhupada wanted that too. He wanted that devotees should not only study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, but also the teachings of the Goswamis. So, of course, we have so many nice books that have come out in India, which are very enlivening. But Prabhupada wanted, especially all of us, to be fixed in our particular service. And we all have different abilities, we all have different brains, we have different levels of intelligence, different interests as well. And Krishna is so kind, he accommodates everybody, including rich people. It's not that this is a society for just the poor. This is poverty-stricken means one who is devoid of Krishna consciousness. Because even a poor man who doesn't have any money, just like in the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was Kolavecha Sridhar, right? Everyone's heard of that story. How he lived, he survived somewhere or another on selling banana leaves. And he would make different utensils out of these banana leaves. And he would use 50% for worshipping the Ganges. And the other 50%, he tried to maintain himself, but not extremely well. He had holes in the roof of his little hut. I've been to the site, actually. I'm sure many of you here have been to Mayapur, have also been taken to that particular location. And he was so poor, he couldn't provide even proper clothing for himself or his family. But he was so dedicated to the Ganges and to worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sometimes come and visit him, and he would see his broken iron pot because he wanted to take a drink of water, and Kolavecha Sridhar felt so embarrassed that, well, you know, this is terrible. I can't offer anything to my Lord. And he would actually go there and snatch the iron pot and drink all of the water because he was so much in love with that Vaishnav. So one doesn't have to think that, well, you know, to be a real member of ISKCON, one has to have it used to be the fashion in the 70s, to have a Rolex watch, to have a special type of diary that used to cost so much money, and special rings and so on and so forth, and, you know, just pure silk cloth and so on. No, actually, that's not, again, that's external. These are external shows of perhaps some kind of material gain. But actually, the bottom line is we should be after spiritual gain, spiritual enrichment. And that's why Narad Muni, he's sitting with Maharaj Yudhisthira, who's not exactly poor himself. This is after the Battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna has gone off, he's set off north to fill up the treasure again, because, you know, wars are very expensive, obviously. So that war costs a huge amount of expenditure. And of course, a huge number of soldiers were killed on the battlefield. Now that was their great fortune too, because they were dying in front of Krishna. They were seeing Krishna, and because of that, they were able to go back home, back to Godhead. So that wasn't also an ordinary type of war experience that we have today, just like in Syria or wherever. There's always outbreaks of disturbances. So Arjuna found this big rubbish heap, as Prabhupada describes it, of golden utensils that were used in the previous yuga. And they only used the gold utensils once, then they chucked them away. Just like, you know, we have our yagyas here, marriages, or first initiation, second initiation. And many times they use these disposable plates made of sugarcane fiber or whatever. And then they seem to be, well, that, maybe I should save that. Sometimes devotees think, well, this is better than, this is definitely an upgrade of the paper plates. Let me keep using this and I'll take it to the, you know, the pantry and wash it. But it only lasts a little time, and then finally you have to throw it away, you have to discard it because it's got no value. But in Treta Yuga, they used pure golden utensils, can you imagine? And then they would use them for that sacrifice, that yajna, and then throw them away. So he brought all those things back. So in the Bhagavatam, when I was mentioning that there weren't so many books, I spent the last amount of my money I had on me, which is £8 in those days, and I got a set of Bhagavatams, which were printed in Delhi, 1962 edition, first, second, and third volumes of the first canto. And a Bhagavad Gita as it is, but it wasn't the BB, because there was no BBT then. This was published by Macmillan. So it was an abridged version, softbound cover, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, because we didn't have Chaitanya Charitamrita, so Prabhupada, of course, not knowing how long he was going to live, he wanted to encapsulate everything. He wanted to give us the most important information, of course, and also the nectar of devotion. So those are the books that I had. And I read in the Bhagavatam that somewhere in the Himalayas, in the Himalayan range, which spreads over 1,500 miles, there's a mountain peak made of solid gold. So after my initiation, I approached Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I read in the Bhagavatam that somewhere in the Himalayas, there's a mountain peak full of, which is, you know, solid gold. Is that true? Prabhupada looked at me and said, yes, it's true. Prabhupada, do you know where it is? Yes. Why do you want to know? I said, well, because, you know, I could understand, although we're living with a very wealthy family, we weren't very wealthy ourselves. We were scraping a living. We had an account with a grocery shop, and we didn't actually have any money to buy any groceries. We just used to go there and put it on the account, just like sometimes we used to have that system here at the manor for the, you know, for the shop, the temple shop. So I said, well, Prabhupada, I was thinking, because you give me this name, that I should set off for India and start climbing in the Himalayas, and I'll take a little bag with me and a little pickaxe, and I'll, you know, chip away a little bit of gold, maybe 20 kilos or something like that. Who's going to miss that? After all, it's a mountain peak. I mean, you know, mountain peaks are large. Who's going to miss 20, 30 kilos of gold? And I'll bring it back. And then, so Prabhupada, would you tell me where it is? And he looked at me again and he said, no, I will not tell you where it is. I said, why, Prabhupada? He said, because this will become too complicated. It'll become controversial. I wasn't thinking, you know, outside the box, really. I was just thinking, well, I've got this name and I've got to do this. Like sometimes we do that. We get caught up in what we're supposed to be doing and really thinking, well, that's what we're supposed to be doing, but it's actually not. Then Prabhupada said, actually, he said, better and more valuable than gold is devotees. You should make devotees. So if anybody comes across this idea, well, you know, the society needs gold and we should hoard it. And no, actually, more valuable than gold is devotees. You should try as much as possible within your capabilities to encourage others to become also full-time devotees. Because after all, already on this planet, this is a middle planet, it's full of Rajaguna, so much passion, so much business, just like Britain, constantly, this present Prime Minister, he's calling out, yes, this is the land where you can do business and we won't tax you so much and we'll do this for you and we'll do that for you. And because people like money. Money is the honey, after all. That's what makes everything sweet. But if you're just only after the honey and not after the real purpose of this human form of life, which is being delineated by Narad Muni to Maharaj Yudhisthira, that don't get distracted. Don't get distracted by your wealth, by your opulence, by your power. No, you should actually now start utilizing your valuable human form of life for becoming God-conscious, Krishna-conscious. That is the most valuable of all assets that any of us could ever acquire in this human form of life. And what is that valuable asset? That valuable asset is understanding what is the actual real purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like this instruction that Narad Muni is giving to Maharaj Yudhisthira is exactly on the same platform as Maharaj Parikshit hearing from Sukadeva Goswami. Because Guru is one. The message is always one. It's not two, it's not five, it's not ten, it's not this, it's not that. And this is something that Prabhupada was so expert. He was so expert at not deviating. Just like when he was in New York and he met Dr. Mishra. Prabhupada was living in the Bowery district. Even Allen Ginsberg, he commented in his interview that here was a Swami lived with the meth heads and the freaks and, you know, just crazy people. But he was a downtown sannyasi. He wasn't an uptown. He wasn't living in an expensive Manhattan apartment filled up with French furniture and old ladies glittering with their jewelry and, you know. So, and Prabhupada was not fruitive like that. He wasn't looking to accumulate 95 Rolls-Royce cars, like some other person tried to do. I won't name any names, but generally speaking, all these other swamis and gurus and yogis who came before Srila Prabhupada, they were after the gold. And they wanted to practice the golden rule, and that golden rule is he who owns the gold rules. I'm sure you've heard that many, many times. But actually, he had in his heart the golden avatar, Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And because he was blessed by his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and the whole Guru Parampara, he was able, even after struggling so hard and some another, he attracted a few intelligent boys in the beginning, and they wanted to help him, and that's the way that he started making a transformation in the lives of all of us. Not just us. It's just amazing when you go now on the internet, how much is out there about Srila Prabhupada on YouTube, or so many people have written things to glorify Srila Prabhupada. Even other swamis, they're even acknowledging what Prabhupada is doing is so beneficial to the whole human society. We're not a vegetarian society. We're not attempting separately or independently to become vegetarians. We're Krishnatarians. We want to eat only those things that Krishna likes. And that's, of course, prasadam. Prasadam is that foodstuff that Krishna has accepted with love and devotion. That's the most important ingredient. I remember we used to visit the Hindujas quite regularly. Now, they're billionaires now. At that time, they were multimillionaires, but now they've gone up a step to being billionaires. And Mother Kalangana, of course, she's still doing that service of making Mangalarti sweets. She's so dedicated, and practically her body is, you can see she's not in very good health. She's not in, her body is all twisted now due to old age. But still her heart is so pure. And so the Hindujas became addicted to Mother Kalangana's Mangalarti sweets. I kid you not. I used to get phone calls all the time. We just run out of rasgullas or rasmalai. Can you help us? Can you bring down some of those amazing Mangalarti sweets that Mother Kalangana makes? And one time, Sri Chand Hinduja asked me, he said, can one of your devotees train up our cook how to make those sweets? We honestly cannot find that taste. We cannot relish that taste, no matter if we go to the most expensive sweet shop in Mumbai or wherever. And I want you to train up our cook how to make those sweets. So there was one French devotee at that time, my godbrother, he went down there, and he spent hours and hours with their cook. But no matter how perfect the cook made the rasgullas, because you know how Prabhupada says they should be spongy, and then when you eat them or bite into them, it's supposed to make a squeaky sound. Although he mastered all the techniques, the only thing that was missing was bhakti. So without that miracle ingredient, that very, very spiritual ingredient, then all these things that people taste in this material world are simply binding them more and more to the fruit of activity. Of course, they're karmis. Karmis, jnanis, and yogis, and then devotees. So actually, we're trying to transform these karmis. And there was a significant transformation in the Hindujas' consciousness due to the fact that they were appreciating Radha Gokulananda's Mahaprasad. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda's Mahaprasadam ki jai. Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai. I also have to thank Bhakti Ravindra Prabhu for putting me on the schedule for the Bhagavatam class, and Gaur Krishna Prabhu for so kindly picking me up and bringing me here. I wanted also to mention how before we got the manor in 1972, we were looking at so many different properties before this one came up. And there was one particular property called Runnymede Farm. Runnymede is a very famous historical place on the River Thames. That's where the Magna Carta was signed by King John in 1180 AD. It was the first sort of declaration of what was going on in the kingdom, and it was an assessment of who owned what and how many cows and how many pigs and how many sheep and how much wheat was produced and so on. It was quite a revolutionary thing that happened. So right there, next door was a farm called Runnymede Farm. And that time, Prabhupada also wanted to come to visit because we were given the responsibility to cultivate Mr. George Harrison because, Berry Place was getting far too small. There was an average of 65 devotees living in a temple that was about half the size of Soho Street. It was very long, very tall, and narrow, extremely narrow. And the legal limit of occupation was 10, but we had 65. So it was a little troublesome, especially the toilet facility. I won't go into details. I might later on, but not now. Anyway, because it's near breakfast time. So Prabhupada called me and he said, I think now it's the time to ask our good friend, Mr. George Harrison, to help us find a bigger property. And so what did I bring to him? Prasadam. As Prabhupada said, this is our secret weapon. So I found out very quickly what he liked. And so I'd only bring those particular things that he liked. He loved samosas, he loved deep-fried potatoes, cauliflower, and eggplant, soaked in sour cream, and puris, and different kinds of sweets. There was a god sister called Vijabadu at that time. She was making burfi, and we used to make burfi using cow and goat milk. It was this milk powder, and also making Simply Wonderfuls. And so she was so expert at making burfi, we used to call her Vijaburfi. Because there was actual transcendental knowledge, some or another, found within that burfi, Vijaburfi. And so then one of those places, as I mentioned, was Runnymede Farm. And Prabhupada came, and George also came, Shamsundar, and there was a couple more of us. And we walked around. It was 120 acres of land with a big house, not as big as this one. And so we spent about half an hour just viewing the fields, and the fields were overgrown because the farmer had stopped farming for the last 2 or 3 years, and there was brambles everywhere and overgrown grass and weeds and so on. So George Harrison, being very witty, he said, they shouldn't call this Runnymede Farm, they should call it Runny Down Farm, because it was completely run down. Anyway, we get up to the hill where the house is, and I thought Prabhupada would like to see inside. I had the keys in my pocket, and there were some really nice rooms, and I thought, what, maybe the one downstairs would make a nice temple room. But actually, Prabhupada stopped at the side of the house, and we were standing around him. And also the driver who drove Prabhupada from Bury Place to Runnymede Farm, he was an elderly gentleman called Bhakti Pramod, and he worked for a very big bank. The bank was called the Midland Bank at that time. Of course, it doesn't exist any longer. But he was a manager, a security manager for the bank. So Prabhupada started looking around, and he said, so here on this spot, and he used his cane, his walking stick, to point to the ground where we were standing. So here we will build a bank. Then he pointed his walking stick to Bhakti Pramod and said, you will be the manager. Then he pointed his stick to George Harrison, and you will deposit all your money in that bank. And we'll spend it all for Krishna. And George was completely amazed. He couldn't believe his ears, that. But that's but why did Prabhupada say that? Because actually, Guru is one. And the Guru wants all the fallen conditioned souls, whether rich or poor, to get the opportunity to surrender fully. Just like, I don't know if this happens here, but does anyone, when you come in and you say, I want to become a brahmachari, I want to go in the Bhakti program, does the Bhakti leader say, how much money do you have? Would you like to surrender all your money to Krishna right now? That would really help you in your brahmachari consciousness. Does that still happen? In America, it used to, if someone came with a car and maybe, you know, some other things, acquisitions, they were told that if you really want to make rapid advancement in our temple, surrender everything to the temple president. That's how the temple got so many cars. Because, you know, devotees would, and if they got an inheritance, just like my English godbrother, Mahavishnu Swami, I don't know if you know his story, but he got an inheritance of £8,000 in 1973. And some or another, he was convinced that all that money should be used for Ratha Yatra. You know that story? A little bit? No? Anyway, so they bought these expensive tents and other paraphernalia to glorify Lord Jagannath Subhadra Baladev. But what they did was, because you know there's lots of flagstones, it's a very old square, Trafalgar Square, and they have really big pieces, big chunks of stone. And so in order to stabilize the tents, and all that, just like we have the same thing now, I saw in Ratha Yatra, there's about 20 tents. But in those days, they dug up the flagstones and made holes to put the poles in. You can't do that normally. I mean, you generally speaking don't get away with that in a place like Trafalgar Square, which is considered a very holy spot. This is, after all, glorifying who? Admiral Lord Nelson, Horatio Nelson's, you know, Battle of Trafalgar in 1805 against the French. So they didn't take kindly to that. And but that was the feeling. Even we didn't have our own dhotis, or even our own kopans, or even our own kurtas. I don't know what it's like now upstairs in the Brahmachari Ashram. I'm sure it's not as renounced as that. We just had one big tub, and everything went to the laundry, and it came back, and it was all in there, and we just picked out of that big plastic tub what we needed, a new dhoti, a new kurta, or, you know. And of course, we try to, you know, regulate the color socks and everything else in the sweaters, because we wanted to be seen as an army, as Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan army. And this was Tamal Krishna's contribution to the London Yatra in 1970. So we want to try as much as possible, because Prabhupada was also constantly looking for opportunities how to engage the fallen souls. Of course, the nicest way was, especially in India, because there's so many very pious, wealthy people there, he would say, give us the land and we'll build the temple. You donate the land, just like our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, that belonged to a very pious family. And it was the wife. She was more convinced about Prabhupada than her husband. Her husband was actually not so convinced. But she said, no, I want to do this. And then so the husband said, well, all right, let's do this. Let's leave it up to Radha and Krishna. Because they had their own home deities, personal house deities of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And so she wrote on different pieces of paper that were folded up, yes, we will give this land. No, we won't give this land. And then they put these pieces of paper before their deities. And so their idea was that, well, whatever piece of paper falls from the altar, because they believed in those things, whatever it says in that piece of paper will follow. And it just so happened, because there were maybe 8 or 10 little pieces of folded up paper put there, and there was, I think there was a fan on at the time, and one little piece of paper fell down. And so she went and picked it up and saw, yes, give the land. So she said, yeah. So Krishna, we can't refuse Krishna. We can argue and argue against each other, the Krishna Balaram temple. And so then that's how we got the land. But the idea is that we should try to not just have an environment of the mode of goodness, but the mode of pure goodness. And of course, the temples with deities, Radha Gokul Ananda, Sidharam Lakshman Hanuman, Gaurani Thai with Srila Prabhupada present also. This is non-different from Sri Vrindavan Dham. This is Krishna's embassy, Vrindavan's embassy. So just like, I think recently someone from Australia who distributed so much information, emails about government decisions and so on and so forth. He got into a lot of trouble. And he's supposed to be prosecuted and sent to Sweden, but he took shelter of the embassy of Ecuador because the president happened to like what he was doing. I think his name is Mr. Assange from Australia. Julian Assange. What did he do exactly? Wikipedia. WikiLeaks. Not Wikipedia, but WikiLeaks. Yeah. So that's he did that, right? All these secret memos and emails and so on and so forth about backroom deals or whatever. It was all out there on the internet. So, but as soon as he entered the embassy of Ecuador, the British government couldn't do anything. It's only when he comes out of there that they can do something, but I don't know how he's going to manage that one because he's supposed to be going to Sweden, where he's also wanted for this reason or another. So the thing is that when people come into this atmosphere, just like I had the good fortune to live in Vrindavan for 10 years continuously, because that's where my service was, and I would go into the temple around about after the morning class and just watch all the guests that were coming with garlands or with some offering, sometimes with fruits and so on. And they'd come before, especially Radha Shamsundar, Lalita Vishakadevi. And they would just almost like go through this amazing transformation as if they've stepped out of the material energy and entered into the spiritual energy. There's a very marked difference in their what they're seeing, what they're witnessing, because of the beauty of the deities of Krishna Balaram, Gaurani Thai. It was a transformation, and that's the transformation that Narad Muni wants to happen in all the hearts of all the personalities residing within this middle planet, a place full of Rajaguna, mode of passion. We have to totally dovetail everything in Krishna's service in that way by doing that, by understanding. Anyway, everything belongs to Krishna. Nothing is mine. Everything belongs to Him. And in that way, by disseminating that very simple truth, of course, and also backing up by books and prasadam, we can make such an amazingly marked transformation in society. Even if we can't even see it happening, it is definitely happening. Inconceivably. Because Krishna is inconceivable. He's achyuta. He's inconceivable. But some another, if we really get attached to prasadam, really get attached to the holy names, Krishna's holy names, really get attached to each other also. That's important to have that sadhu sangha, that saintly association, because that's the glue that holds everything together. And we have to work together in a very nice cooperative mood, in a very positive mood. Prabhupada loved the fact that devotees were always enthusiastic to come together and have kirtan, and go out and Harinam Sankirtan as well. It's so nice, and it's completely authorized, all because the Guru Parampara are looking down upon all of us and giving us so much spiritual support, individually and collectively. And that's what Narad Muni is saying, that don't be just attached to your business profits, or don't be attached to your professional activities. Don't engage in ritualistic ceremonies, because they're not going to be able to help anyone who is not a devotee of Krishna. So if anybody wants to know the secret of success, even of being a millionaire, then you have to go and visit a devotee and become trained up by that person. Take shelter of the lotus feet of those great Vaishnavas. So we'll finish there. Is there any questions or comments?